This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Since we taped our last program, the Republicans' legislative attempt at repealing Obamacare was pulled by Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. So is the American Health Care Act dead? Representative Dave Bratt of Virginia, a member of the Committee on the Budget and the House Freedom Caucus, joins Tony to give you the latest.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, pleasure to be on with you.
Well, let's take that first issue, because I know I had a number of discussions with members of the Freedom Caucus, and their concern was the fact that what we were doing or what was being done would not ultimately affect the cost of health care because we were not truly returning to free market principles. What do you say?
Yeah, well, that is the core issue. And if we would have had a little bit more of the Trump core principles in on this, right? Trump did a great job of negotiating. We almost got there at the end. We were getting rid of the insurance reg, which drive up the cost, but President Trump's concern for the forgotten man, number one, right? That is why you have to have prices coming down. And underneath this bill, prices would go up 15 to 20% until 2020. And that's not good enough. And then his core second principle is cleaning the swamp and getting rid of special interest. Well, this is another federal mandated bill, right, that is going to manage one-sixth of the economy through the federal government. And so the insurance regulations are very complex and hard to understand, but I think the person back home gets it. When you go, your young person cannot go out and buy a cheap catastrophic plan. Why not? Because there's all these essential health care benefits. There's the Title I regulation. You have to buy everything, every option available, and it's very expensive. And then on the bronze plan under Obamacare, the lowest plan, there's a $10,000 deductible now on average. So the prices are blown up through the roof, and then the bill wasn't polling well. It was 17% favorable the week before with Quinnipiac, right? And there was an average of all the polls, so if people don't believe me, just go look it up. But that we got to make sure we get this thing right. And so President Trump was doing the right thing. He was negotiating on the insurance reg, and now there's still good news. Some people think, Bill, it's not dead. We ran on this for 6 years. And by the way, some people are saying the House Freedom Caucus can't get the yes on anything. Well, no, that's not true. For 6 years, we all voted yes 50 times in a row, right, on a repeal bill.
So the Freedom Caucus was key in supporting the 2015 reconciliation bill, which was the first bill that actually made it to the president's desk that gutted Obamacare.
Right. And so in this bill, we all recognize you got to compromise. So we were compromising within a federally run healthcare system, right? So for a free market economist to be negotiating within a federally run system, let me tell you, we were bending over backwards to try to get to yes. But we didn't work it out so that I could go back home and say, hey, the price is going to come down immediately. And that's where we got to get.
It is, and that's ultimately what the American voter and the American citizen is going to look at in 18 months from now is, okay, the Republicans replaced this, but am I paying less for as good or better care than what I was getting under Obamacare? Correct?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And compare your premiums with Obamacare. Look at your premiums 10 years ago, right? And you almost need health care because you're going to have a heart attack when you see how much prices are going up every year. And so that's the good. President Trump is a smart businessman, right? So he knows product quality and product price are the key, and he knows the premiums are going up again under Obamacare. So we're going to come back. He already knew it is dead, and we're going to get a better bill. And this time, I think when he gives a little more input on making sure we price it right for the forgotten man and woman back home, we're going to get a much better bill, and we're going to make everyone proud.
So, Congressman Brown, what's the time frame on that? Is that something we see before the end of summer, or is that something that's going to be taken up next year?
Oh, I think we're shooting before the end of summer, at least. I mean, Mike Lee over on the Senate side is working to get, you know, that's part of the problem was we were at an artificial timeline with 3 weeks. So we were really rushing it through, trying to monitor, and this is the problem, right? You're trying to analyze 1/6 of the economy and all the moving pieces in that.
Right.
It was an incredible task. So, but with a few more weeks or a couple more months, we're going to get it straight and put bucket two has to do with what Tom Price can do and the insurance regulation. And we want as much of that as possible in the bill because then it's permanent, right? It becomes law.
Right.
If it's not permanent, then the next secretary under a Democrat regime can return it all back to Obamacare. So these moves, this is a once-in-a-century opportunity where we have the House and the Senate and the President, and we cannot goof this one up. We've got to get it right.
So, Congressman Brett, let's talk about that bill we spoke about just a few moments ago, the 2015 reconciliation bill, which the House passed. It passed through the Senate, went to President Obama's desk. He vetoed it. It gutted Obamacare. It eliminated 80% of the funding for Planned Parenthood for a year. What are the prospects of simply resurrecting that bill? It was said at the time under a Democratic president that it was to kind of show the American people what Republicans would do if they were in control. Why not just dust that off and try it again?
Yeah, well, I hate to get a little cynical, but I think we just saw the evidence. I mean, what was not reported in the press is more moderates were peeling off from this past bill than the House Freedom Caucus. We had probably less than, right at about half the Freedom Caucus could vote yes and vote no. There were 40 or 50 moderates that were going to peel off. And so if you do the 2015 bill, that's closer to a full repeal, and you'll get way more moderate peel off from that bill.
But let me push back on that because they voted for it in 2015.
Yeah.
Why not come back and say, hey, you voted for it, same bill. Why not vote for it today?
Yeah, well, that in my view, that's what we should do, right? And then it's always better to start off with that as your baseline, right? Then you can add the key safety net pieces, right? You start off with free markets, and you let the insurance be insurance again, right? And everybody should remember back to the mortgage market when the federal government started giving out free mortgages and caused the housing crisis and then the financial crisis. So right now, you don't have the insurance companies doing insurance, and that's scary, right? So we all make fun of the big insurance companies, but part of it's not their fault. They're scared of the federal government, too. And so we need to give them relief and let them return to free markets like we should have let bankers return to banking and calculating risk. They provide a tremendous service for us. And so we ought to start with that baseline. And then we all believe in a safety net, right, the Judeo-Christian tradition. And the problem there is the pre-existing piece. That's not an insurance problem. They can't get insurance, right? So that's a health care provision problem, and that needs to be solved separately. And we agreed with that. We put $100 billion
right
up for high-risk pools for the state, and you didn't hear us fighting back on that, right?
Yeah.
But we insisted that the insurance piece, we've got to return to free markets so the USA remains a free market economy.
Yeah, and I think the problem you have or we had with this current plan is that it did not return to those market principles. But one final question for you, Congressman Brett. Today, Sean Spicer asked about the whole issue of health care. Obviously, it's front and center because this is, I would have to say, you know, honestly, a setback for President Trump, who, you know, has put himself out there as a great negotiator and you know, wasn't able to bring even the Republicans along, now is saying that he's willing to work with Democrats on this. Is there a chance that they actually turn out with a more liberal plan that would bypass Republicans and work with Democrats?
No, I can't realistically see that. I mean, Chuck Schumer and Pelosi are so dug in politically. I mean, they think if Bernie's a little too far conservative these days. I mean, they got Elizabeth Warren. I mean, they're all racing so far toward the left that it's not comprehensible. They would come our way on anything, much less agreeing to work on tax reform or on health care. So we got the conservatives, and, you know, a lot of people are coming after us. The mainstream media makes it very easy, right? They never go after liberals.
Right.
They very rarely go after moderate Republicans. Where are they going to go after? They're going to go after the, you know, I got a PhD in economics and went to Princeton Seminary, et cetera, right? And
yeah.
So if you're a conservative and you actually believe your own stuff, and I taught economics for 20 years, everybody in my district knows, right? If I don't vote for my principles, they know I'm fudging.
Right.
And so I got to be true to my character and who I am, and I put up the right vote. And in time, right now, there's a lot of tension, and everybody has ulcers, and we need aspirin at night. But this will fade, and everybody will see when the dust settles what the principled way to proceed was, and I think you put your finger on it.
I agree with you 100%. That's why I got you on the program, because I know you shoot straight. Congressman Dave Bratt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony. Honored to be on your program.
You can find out more about the health care bill when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at President Trump's recent executive order on the environment.
When governments authorize abortion, do abortions in that country decrease? Many argue that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as if rarity depends upon safety and legality. We now have nearly a century of evidence documenting what happens when governments authorize abortion. It increases exponentially. The newly released Abortion Worldwide report details the greatest genocide ever. 1 billion babies aborted in 100 nations since 1920. Visit frc.org/university to view this policy discussion.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Thursday's edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt. They spoke about President Trump's executive order reversing many Obama-era climate regulations. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Good. Have you settled into the new spot yet?
Oh, I think settled might be we're getting settled. Let's just say that.
Well, you got a lot of work to do, and I think yesterday or earlier this week, a lot of activity there as the president came over to sign his executive order. Tell our listeners what the executive order would do.
Well, I think you described it very, very well, Tony. Energy independence is what the focus of the executive order addressed, and it dealt not just with coal, but also oil and gas. Fossil fuels generally, the opportunity we have as a country to develop resources. I mean, the last administration, as you know, Tony, had an approach of keeping fossil fuels in the ground and had a war on coal that the president announced on Tuesday had ended. And now the steps have begun here at the EPA to undo the rules that have been passed over the last few years that were not within the framework of the Clean Air Act and other environmental statutes, and really cleaning up that process and getting a path forward that recognizes we can be pro-growth, pro-jobs, and pro-environment. And it's an exciting time. We had, for the first time, well, I shouldn't say the first time, Tony, but I'm sure perhaps the first time, at the press conference announcing the executive order, we had coal miners in attendance. I know it was their first time here, because I asked them directly, and they were very emotional about this war on coal, the regulatory assault that they've endured the last several years, that it's ended.
I imagine, given what they've experienced in the last 8 years, they were probably wearing their hard hats when they came into the EPA.
Yeah, that's they were very emotional, actually. You could see that they were very, I think, appreciative of the president's leadership and what he did to send the signal that it's wrong for government to declare a war on any sector of their economy. And 411-plus coal generation facilities across the country were shut down during the Obama administration. That means higher electricity costs for consumers. Mm-hmm. That means less reliability on the power grid and less jobs that occurred during that time frame in the energy sector. And all that was changed on Tuesday.
Well, and that disproportionately hurts the lower class, those who have to pay a larger percentage of their annual income into energy. That hurts them when energy prices go up.
It does, and I think what's wrong is over the last several years, utility companies, as they generate electricity, they ought to be able to make decisions based upon reliability, the stability of the grid, and cost. They ought to be able to draw from a variety of fuel sources, a fuel diversity, if you will, coal, natural gas, oil, renewables, solar, hydro, the rest. All those things should be used by utility companies. Government shouldn't come into the marketplace and tell them which ones are proper and which ones aren't. And that's what's happened over the last several years. There was an attitude that says, don't choose coal, don't choose fossil fuels. You know, up until the last few years, Tony, coal generation, it was around 40% of our electricity generation in this country. It's now down around 31-32%. And so this war on coal was real. It cost jobs in West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, regions across the country that literally the government had put them within the crosshairs. So it was a very important day for America, a very important day for energy independence, and a very important day to say that regulators no more are going to be picking winners and losers. We're going to do what's fair and equitable for all as we allow energy to be developed in this country.
Well, and Scott Pruitt, there is an element of this as a national security issue. As we are dependent on foreign sources of energy, we are increasingly in a hostile world, finding ourselves at a point where that energy supply could be cut off.
Yes. I mean, when you look at our reliability upon foreign oil, it's actually less than what it was a few years ago, as you know, but it's still, roughly 20-25% or so, 25-26%. That's less than what it's been over the last several years. But at the same time, why do we have regulation and policies in place preventing the Dakota Access Pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline? You know, the ability to develop our resources, oil, natural gas, and coal. I mean, all those things seem to me to be not within the purview of government. Government ought not be preventing that. It ought to be setting standards that can be met to ensure clean air and clean water, and then letting markets determine, which energy sources we use to generate electricity. So it's a new day, a new attitude. There's hope and optimism for the first time in a long time in the energy sector. We have tremendous opportunity, and I think people are very excited about it.
Not everybody was excited about it, Scott. You had some Democratic-led states and local governments issued a statement saying that they would oppose the new regulations and the executive order in court, which I actually found somewhat comical, because what the president, as I understand it, is doing is simply undoing the executive order that was done by President Obama, which is in the purview of the executive.
Well, what's interesting about it is that the Clean Power Plan, which was the subject of the executive order that was introduced as a rule by the EPA in 2015, is the subject of a U.S. Supreme Court stay. And you don't get a stay of enforcement of a rule unless there's a likelihood of success, meaning that the law is unlawful. And so what the president's actually doing is recognizing what the courts have already recognized, that the steps that were taken by the previous administration weren't consistent with their authority. And why we should continue to spend resources on advancing something that the Supreme Court has said is likely deficient doesn't do anything to improve air quality in this country and provides great uncertainty in the marketplace. So that's why this is very important. We now have sent a message that we're going to fix that problem.
Right.
The Clean Power Plan that's been declared, likely unlawful by the U.S. Supreme Court is going to go away. And then we're going to take steps going forward that are within the authority of this agency and the framework that Congress has adopted. I mean, Tony, you and I have talked about this in the past. I mean, the executive branch, the agencies that make up the president's cabinet, the EPA being obviously the one we're talking about today, we only possess the authority that Congress gives us.
Right.
We can't go in and reimagine a statute or fill in, pinch hit, and do things that Congress has not allowed us to do. And so this agency twice has tried to regulate carbon. It tried to regulate carbon with the tailoring rule, CO2, and that was struck down in the UARG decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. And secondly, the Clean Power Plan was introduced in 2015. And again, the U.S. Supreme Court entered in and said, no, it's likely unlawful, we're going to issue a stay. So the agency's 0 for 2. They're batting zero as we head into baseball season. And the question should be asked, are the tools in the toolbox? Has Congress actually given this agency the authority, the
right
tools to deal with greenhouse gases and CO2 in the way that many think should occur? And I think that's a very fair and fundamental question that should be asked and answered. It's not something the past administration cared about. They actually talked about that as they went through the rulemaking and enlarged their authority in the statute, and that's why it was struck down. So the president is making a difference here to say, look, that's not the right way. We're going to set a better course going forward.
You can find out more about Scott Pruitt and the Environmental Protection Agency when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, a look at North Carolina's HB2 law. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Tony Perkins here, inviting you to join my wife, LaJuana, and me on Family Research Council's first ever Alaska cruise. On July 29th, we'll sail from Seattle aboard Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam for an adventure of fellowship and worship surrounded by some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to tonyperkins.com. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or tonyperkins.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Over the last year or so, you've heard us talk a number of times about North Carolina's HB2 law, requiring people to use the restroom associated with their natural gender. This week, North Carolina's General Assembly voted to repeal that law, but those in the LGBTQ movement are not happy about it. Here's FRC's President Tony Perkins to talk about that bill with former North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory.
Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks very much, Congressman. Kind of great seeing you again or hearing from you. And very interesting day in North Carolina. The good news is this. The HRC lost a battle. And with their resources and power and money, and they're trying to get some other corporations to help support them in the battle that they lost, the usual players out in California. The fact of the matter is they did not get a full repeal of HB2. They do not have the power at the local level to change the definition of gender, which is really what it comes down to. Are we going to change the definition of gender or not? And that shouldn't be a decision made by a mayor or a governor or by the NCAA.
Right.
That's not their right to make the decision. This is going to end up going to the Supreme Court, and hopefully with a new Supreme Court justice that's been nominated by President Trump, there'll be a ruling in which we keep the definition of gender as we've been using in the 1964 Civil Rights Act for generations. And I think that's where this is going to be resolved. We also have to compliment President Trump for overriding the Obama order on Title VII and Title IX, which was threatening our corporations and businesses with over 15 people and threatening our universities with loss of federal money unless they conform to changing the definition of gender to gender expression or gender identity. Because that's really what this whole argument's about, which the media will not explain.
Right.
And where I failed to explain, I mean, because the media, I'm even watching CNN on the screen right now, and they're misleading the public about what HB2 actually did. And that's what the current governor is going to try to do, too, is to put a spin on this as though this is a victory when even the far left knows this is not a victory for them. And I think they're letting the current governor know this and that they put them him in office.
Well, what's interesting, I think we see a division now between the LGBTQ agitators and the businesses that they've had on strings like a puppet, that apparently business waking up to the fact that they could never satisfy this constituency.
You can't satisfy the extreme left. You can't do it. They'll never be satisfied. They're raising money off this issue. And the current governor got elected on this issue, many say, and raised millions of dollars on this issue, but he will find out that he cannot satisfy them. And So that's what said. They're protesting. The same protesters that protested me are now protesting the current governor. But he's trying to put a spin on it that it'll be interesting if it works or not. But, again, I've been saying to you and to many others that this is going to have to be resolved either by the U.S. Congress or by the Supreme Court. Thankfully, Donald Trump won the election where the Supreme Court now will hopefully be more conservative and not let a Justice Department run all over small businesses and our universities, where we've lost a lot of control as it is. So.
Well, Governor, as I see the legislation, if I read, I mean, it's pretty simple, straightforward. It's a half page. The effect of it, you know, is not that. It's basically, it does not allow Charlotte to do what it did that started this whole thing. So that remains the same. Men will use men's rooms and women's will use women's rooms and showers.
As we always did.
Right, right. But back in normal times.
Most people don't realize, I signed HB 2. It was really in reaction to Charlotte, which most people don't know this, but Charlotte passed an ordinance which threatened a 30-day jail sentence and a $500 fine for any private sector company which didn't recognize gender identity or gender expression as the new definition as it relates to our public facility, to their own public facility.
Right.
And I don't think the business community ever understood that either. And that's wrong. That's government overreach at any level.
And these businesses were free to adopt that policy under HB 2 if they wanted to, but they never did.
That's correct. And most people think we passed the bathroom rule.
No.
No, the city passed the bathroom rule, which was a liberal interpretation of gender. And that's the, you know, most people say Governor McCrory signed a bathroom bill. That's
you overturned the bathroom. 90%
false. It only applied to our schools and universities.
Right.
And our highway rest stops and government buildings. But you wouldn't know that by watching CNN
You mean fake news? Fake news. That's right. Hey, Governor, got to leave it there. We're out of time. Up against the break. As always, great to talk with you. We'll be tracking this, and we'll talk to you soon.
You can find out more about what's going on in North Carolina when you visit TonyPerkins.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to all the stories when you visit that website. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.